This is a paid message from GoFundMe. Meet Juan Naula. When his son was hospitalized for a viral infection, Juan started a GoFundMe to pay for medical expenses.
It was $5,000 to pay the bill for my son, and I needed only 22 hours. It was amazing. People really trust on GoFundMe.
How did Juan raise $5,000 in less than a day? He posted a short video on GoFundMe, telling his story in 30 seconds.
30 seconds. Be specific, be quick, and tell what are you going to be using the funds for. I was nervous to do it because it doesn't feel okay to ask money, but you shouldn't be nervous. Sometimes you just have to do it and see the results. We were able to save my son's life. Thanks to GoFundMe that we still have my son with us.
Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This message reflects one person's experience.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Professor Shane Higgins, consultant obstetrician and gynaecologist from the National Maternity Hospital at Holles Street, is with me in studio to answer your questions. How are you doing, Shane?
Very well, Andrea, thank you.
You're here today to chat about the conditions that could affect people during pregnancy, or those things that affect them actually even trying to get pregnant as well. We've been talking about elements to starting the pregnancy journey in the show here over the past 2 weeks, and listeners can listen back to those. The podcasts are all available. You can access all of our conversations on the Go Loud app. Just subscribe there to Lunchtime Live. But what are the most, I suppose, common conditions or things that can affect people?
Well, I suppose broadly speaking, you can look at it in a number of ways. One is conditions that arise during the course of pregnancy that can affect the outcome of the pregnancy. And if we focus on those, a couple of the most common ones, although they're not that common, are preeclampsia, gestational diabetes, and the risk of prematurity. And often, and most of the time, patients will embark upon pregnancy not knowing that there's a significant risk to them until they develop them.
Tell us about them.
So preeclampsia is a very serious condition that can affect pregnant women. It's described as a disease of first-time mums, which means if you get it in your first pregnancy, you're more likely to get it in subsequent pregnancies. If you don't get it in your first pregnancy, then you're very unlikely to get it in subsequent pregnancies. And it affects about 3 to 5% of first-time mums. It's described as a blood pressure disease that arises in the second half of pregnancy. It's a multi-system disease. It affects the hematology system, the liver, the renal, the placenta, the baby, therefore, through the placenta. And unless it's managed, and managing is just keeping it at bay, keeping the blood pressure under control until you get to a point where you have to deliver the baby. And that is the definitive treatment of preeclampsia, is to deliver the baby. And everything you do in the interim is just to try and buy some time.
Yeah. Will you know that you have it?
Well, the commonest symptoms are, and again, it's in the second half of pregnancy that these symptoms might arise. It would be headaches, visual disturbances, as in floaters, flashing lights, blurred vision, some epigastric, so just under your sternum, some pain there can occur, right upper quadrant where your liver is, you can get some pain there as the liver capsule stretches. That's the severest end of the spectrum. A lot of patients will be relatively asymptomatic, but because you go to your antenatal care and you get your blood pressure checked at every visit and you get your urine dipped for protein, and they're two of the cardinal features, it's often picked up in a very early stage and then managed well, and then the patient's delivered in a timely fashion. But severe headaches that you have no history of, with any visual disturbance, any concern about the baby's movement, should prompt you to go straight into the hospital.
So it can be managed, but...
managed until you can't manage it any longer, as in you can't, the blood pressure medications no longer control the blood pressure, or there's concerns about the baby's well-being, in which case you just deliver at that point.
Now, you mentioned gestational diabetes. I hear about this a lot.
Yeah. A growing problem, increasing numbers of women developing it, and up to 15% of patients in Ireland will develop gestational diabetes, where they run on high blood sugars. And pregnancy is what's referred to as a diabetogenic state anyway. So you do tend to run on slightly higher sugars, but this is where those sugars, those sugar levels in your blood run out of control. And that can be harmful again to mum and to the baby. So it's important, again, that that's picked up. And there are risk factors for diabetes, as there are for conditions like preeclampsia. So older mothers, family history of diabetes, big babies, polyhydramnios, they might be features where there's perhaps excess fluid around the baby. These might be features that prompt you to investigate and look.
Why is it on the rise?
Diet The advancing age of our population, high BMIs, they're all really okay. big risk factors for developing gestational diabetes.
So can you prevent yourself from getting it, or is that predetermined?
Well, you prevent is perhaps too strong a word. You can reduce the risk of it arising. Right. And there was a publication in the BMJ in January, which one of my colleagues in Hollistry contributed to, where they're saying that if you manage your diet very well during pregnancy, and we keep going on about diet in pregnancy, and if you manage your exercise, activity, diet can reduce your risk of developing diabetes. And there was a really large, I suppose, meta-analysis of different studies put together and published in the BMJ in January. And it did come down on the side of good activity, good moderate levels of activity and a healthy diet will reduce your risk, but won't remove the risk.
Mm. 087 1400 106, that is the WhatsApp number. Listeners wondering, if my mother and sister both had gestational diabetes during pregnancy, am I likely to get it?
You have a higher risk because of the strong family history. And that also applies to preeclampsia. If you've got a primary relative like a sister or a mum who had preeclampsia, you're at greater risk of developing that also. But yeah, family history for diabetes and preeclampsia.
Listeners wondering, can you ask about, and I'm going to pronounce this right, about pregnancy, is it cholestasis?
Intrahepatic cholestasis of pregnancy. It is a bit of a mouthful, isn't it? Yeah.
What is it?
It's a temporary derangement and of how the liver performs during pregnancy. And again, it's often picked up incidentally, but patients may present with itch. And if a patient presents with itch, particularly again in the latter stages of pregnancy, we would check bloods, check their liver function tests, and you would see this derangement of how the liver works, not to the absolute detriment of the patient, but there's also a buildup of substances called bile acids, and they can be harmful to the baby. So again, it needs to be managed, you need to be monitored, and if the levels of these bile acids rise too high, then there might be consideration given to intervening and delivering the baby.
Listeners wondering, in terms of the cause, as far as concerns for my liver, can I manage it?
The cholestasis? No.
No.
You can't. You don't even know it's there until it's there. You don't even know you're at risk until it develops. So there's nothing you can do to prevent that.
A listener got carpal tunnel syndrome during their first pregnancy. I've heard this is desperate, really, really debilitating. She's wondering, will I get it for my second?
Yeah, look, there's a risk of it. I don't know what the absolute recurrence risk is for carpal tunnel syndrome, because it doesn't happen all that frequently. But as you said, it can be extremely debilitating, very painful. Mm. We all have a carpal tunnel.
It's your thumb, isn't it?
Well, it's your entire hand. So the carpal tunnel is a fascial band around the wrist, and underneath it run the arteries and nerves that serve the hand. And if you get compression of those arteries and nerves, particularly the nerves, you get pins and needles, numbness, stiffness of your joints. Very, very uncomfortable. Some people, and I certainly advise patients, wrist splints that you would see in patients who have arthritis or have sprained a wrist, that can be sometimes helpful in alleviating some of the symptoms. So if you do suffer from carpal tunnel syndrome, by all means, go and speak to your obstetrician or midwife. They will give you advice. There's no magic cure. It should resolve after the birth of the baby, and very, very rarely, and in my 40 years, I've probably seen it twice, where they would need to decompress the carpal tunnel, such as the severity of the symptoms. Mm,
but if you've had it during the first pregnancy,
you are at risk, yes.
You are at risk. And in preparation of that, just the splint that you mentioned, is that it?
Yeah, no, the splint is more for patients who actually have the symptoms. So if you have that early morning stiffness, numbness, then wearing the splint when you don't need fine dexterity, like using a keyboard, might help with the symptoms.
087 1400 106 is the WhatsApp number if you have a question for consultant obstetrician and gynaecologist Shane Higgins. This listener just found out that they're pregnant, about 6 weeks, Shane. I keep getting a shooting pain in the left-hand side of my lower stomach. Mm-hmm. Is this something I should be concerned about? The pain comes and goes and it seems to ease after I go to the toilet. Is it normal, or should I be worried?
Well, congratulations, first of all. I think the two things, and particularly one thing, until you have established and by ultrasound that the pregnancy is in the uterus, then you would have concerns with a pain in the lower left tummy and a positive pregnancy test that this might be an ectopic pregnancy. So without alarming the patient, if they've already had a scan and it's identified that the pregnancy is in the uterus, then they're almost certainly okay. But given that the patient also describes some of these symptoms around the time of passing urine, they may have a urinary tract infection. So getting a urine sample to your GP to have it checked would be helpful also.
My wife ended up having to be hospitalised because of hyperemesis in her first child. We'd love to expand her family, but given how severe her symptoms were, we're trying to see if it's realistic to plan for a second. How early can treatment and medical intervention start? She'd take months off the last time, and will this be as severe as well?
Yeah, dreadfully debilitating for some patients,
what
I have
is
to
that?
Say.
Sorry.
Hyperemesis is excessive nausea and vomiting in pregnancy. That's the definition. We, as a hospital, are so conscious of how debilitating this can be that we've established a full-time clinic dedicated to patients suffering from this. And treatment can start immediately. And there's a host of different treatments, from the pharmacological, like Caraban, and other medications, down to replacement of fluids and electrolytes and vitamins. Simple things as, and I'm sure for this patient, this is probably something that they've tried, you know, acupuncture, C-bands, they can sometimes be helpful. But treatment can be commenced from as soon as you start to experience the symptoms, particularly if you're at the severe end of the spectrum. Lots of patients will have a little bit of nausea, some vomiting. They manage it at home. They break their meals down to little and often. They have more bland foods to try and help them manage it for that first trimester. Most hyperemesis will settle between about week 15 and 17, and the patient should be symptom-free. But unfortunately, for a small number, it can continue throughout the pregnancy, and it's dreadful.
And is that something, can they contact the hospital in advance?
Absolutely.
Meet?
Or? Well, yeah, again, but to reassure somewhat the patient, even if you had hyperemesis the first time, it's not a guarantee that you're going to get it the second time. You won't know until you actually embark upon the pregnancy. But the Iris Clinic at the National Maternity Hospital is dedicated to for hyperemesis patients. You can contact the hospital. They'll put you in touch with the clinic. You'll be brought in. And it's a very bespoke treatment for the individual needs of the patient.
All right. For the moment, we leave it there. Professor Shane Higgins, consultant, obstetrician and gynaecologist at the National Maternity Hospital at Holles Street. Shane, thanks a million for joining us here this Wednesday. Of course, Shane will be back as always next Wednesday afternoon at 12:40.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.